They're rolling on Lamed Vav Amud Beis. The fourth line of the fourth to last line of the narrow lines. The line begins Voy Nachtvila. We learned in the Mishnah that a Giyoda, a Shavuya, a Shivcha, that
above the Yehuda.
We learned in the Mishnah that a Giyoda, a Shavuya, or a Shivcha Mishachreres, where their change of status happened after they were three, since there's reason to assume that they may have had Ve'ila before they were freed or redeemed or what have you, then therefore we can't assume that they're b'sola, and therefore they don't get the knas. There's no din of onus and mafata with them. Then we had in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda had said that no, a shavuya who was redeemed harei b'kedusha, so she still has her same kedusha, even though she's older. We don't assume that any b'ila was done. And we discussed yesterday, would Rabbi Yehuda hold of that across the board, or maybe he only holds in this case. We said two possibilities actually. One is that maybe we said that shaloya hechoyte nisker, that in this case, for purposes of onus and mafata, we're going to make the onus and mafata pay the 50 sloyim and whatever other payments you have to make, even on the off chance that she's not a basula, because we don't want him to gain. We don't want her to have that he's going to have done something like this and get away with it. That would be one possibility. Or the other possibility is that no, he really means that we're makel on it. So we're trying to find out, right? Yeah. Right. So we had Rabbi Yochanan who said that Rabbi Doisa says in a Braisa that a Shavuya can eat Truma, and evidently Rabbi Yehuda holds the same thing. And Rabbi said that not necessarily. Maybe the difference is in our mission of Shaloye Chote Nisker, or in Rabbi Doisa's case, Truma is the Rabbanan. So now, getting back to this, the Sover Rabbi Yehuda with the Shasa Kaima, the Gemara asks, are you telling me then that Rabbi Yehuda holds that a Shavuya still has Okdusha, that we assume that no Be'ila was done? But we learn a braisa. If somebody redeems a shvuya from captivity, he's allowed to marry her. Meaning, if he's a kohen, we're not concerned that she was nivol. However, made ba lo yisena. But if he gives edus on her, then he can't marry her. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a bein kach lo yisena. The edus mean that nothing happened. That she was captured, but none of the goyim had their way with her. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a bein kach lo yisena, whereas Rabbi Yehuda says either way he shouldn't marry her. Now, before we get into what Rabbi Yehuda exactly holds, the question is hagufa kasha. First, we have a contradiction in the braisa itself. Amra tapoida sashvuya yisena. First, you're saying if he redeems her, then he's allowed to marry her. Meaning we're not talking yet about edus. V'hadatona made ba lo yisena. Then we're saying he gives edus, then he's not allowed to marry her. So what? Mishum de made ba lo yisena. Why is the fact that he's saying edus on her make things worse? But he's negev a davar. He's negev a davar either way. If he marries her, he's also. I mean, if he redeems her on the face of it, he's also negev a davar. If he redeems her, if he's paying money to get her out of captivity on the face of it, he's also negev a davar.
But he said he paid money.
That's where the papoida, that's a shuriya. What would that mean? It means that he redeems her, yeah. So no, holy kasha, no, so that's not a problem. Holy karma, what it means is like this. Hapoida is a shuriya umeid by yisena. If he does both, he redeems her, he pays money to the captors, and afterwards he gives edus and based in that she remained tar, then he's allowed to marry her. But made by kedi, but if he's marrying her, if he's giving edus for nothing, meaning he didn't actually, so to speak, put his money where his mouth is, as the Gemara is going to say in a couple of lines, then he shouldn't marry her. Just based on edus, we're not going to allow him to marry her. But if he's actually being paid to her, then we will, and we'll get back to in a minute what the logic would be. Be that as it may, the point is we have a question. You're saying in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that we assume that a shavuya remained to her. So why is Rabbi Yehuda in this braisa saying lo yisena? Rabbi Yehuda am a bein kach lo yisena. That either way, he's not allowed to marry her. And this question really would be so. Tosfos points out that actually the question is really only according to the understanding of Rabbi Yochanan that Rabbi Yehuda's reason is that he says we can definitely assume that she's tahor. That's why he said she's allowed to eat truma, etc. According to Rabbi's reason, if the logic is shaloyeh chayte niska, we don't want somebody like in our Mishnah, the onus of mafata did something wrong. We don't want it to get away with it. Well, then fine. That has nothing to do with this braisa over here. You might well say. Usually we would consider a shvuya, there's a chazaka that Be'ila was done, that onus was done. But in the case of our Mishnah, we're saying she still gets the knaf anyway. Shalo yechayt niska. That wouldn't be relevant in the case of a shvuya. In the case of the koyin marrying a shvuya. But okay, the question is according to Rabbi Yechanan. Amra Papa, Eimer, Rabbi Yehuda Eimer, Bein Kach Bein Kach Yisena. So Rabbi Papa says, you're right, you have to change the words of the Braisa that Rabbi Yehuda says, either way he is allowed to marry her. So the Ritzvah, not Lo Yisena, to Yisena. So the Ritzvah says, maybe what it is, maybe what Rabbi Papa is saying is that you understand the wording in the Braisa to be like Belosh and Tema. Rabbi Yehuda Eimer, Bein Kach Bein Kach Lo Yisena. You're telling me that either way he shouldn't be able to marry her? No, of course not. Of course, either way he should be able to marry her. Yeah. Rabbi Yehuda bred Rabbi Yeshua. Mela olam kikatani. No, we could keep the words of the Braisa. Rabbi Yehuda, but Rabbi Yehuda Rabbanan Kamala. Rabbi Yehuda is saying to the Rabbanan, according to your own logic, he's saying l'didi ben kach ben kachisena. Me, I don't worry that a shvuya was ever raped by her captors at all. Therefore, I hold that for sure that either way, whether this guy is just giving aegis on her, or whether he actually freed her, either way, he should be able to marry her. But according to you, why are you making a distinction between whether he gave aiders or whether he actually paid money for her? According to your own logic, you're concerned that she may have been raped. So why are you making a distinction if he was paid to her versus not? Where's the Rabbanan answer to that? That's what we're explaining. When the Braisa says, Rabbi Yehuda ben kach ben kach lo yisena, that Rabbi Yehuda would be saying to the Rabbanan, why are you making a distinction? According to you, that you're concerned that Shvuya was raped, then why is there a reason to distinguish between Poda and not Poda? So the Rabbanan answered like this. The difference is, a Poda is a Shvuya made by yisena, because lo yishadi inish zuzi bichdi, because the person doesn't throw away his money for nothing. If he was willing to put his money where his mouth is, and actually pay money for her, then it shows that he has a strong reason to think that she really is Tahar. And actually, the Taz points out in Shulchan Aruch, the vote is, when you get down to it, what could happen in principle after he pays for her release? She could end up admitting in front of Beis Din that actually one of these guys did rape her, and then she'd be also to him. The fact that he's willing to take that chance shows that there's strong evidence that not, that he knows that that's not going to happen. As opposed to made Bakadi, lo yisena, but if he's just giving aiders and not actually paying anything, then he shouldn't marry her Shema Ein of nothing, but because then there's more reason to think that maybe just he's giving aiders falsely, or maybe not false, maybe not outright falsely, but at least not based on full knowledge of the situation because he likes her and he wants to marry her.
It's unlikely that she was after she's been redeemed and says she's not.
But she might. If she really was raped, then she would have to. If she really was, she would have to in order that she doesn't marry a kohen and her children end up being halalim.
If she's not a kohen,
if he's not a kohen, we're not an issue. The whole thing we're talking about over here is either kohen. Yeah. Which brings up, by the way, something that I mentioned in that email that Yaakov forwarded to you, a vote from the Chidah, which also the Bnei Yisachar brings it also. The Gemara brings in Sanhedrin that the Elikechem Koyin, who the Eibishter, so to speak, is a Koyin, the Yichuli Truma. Truma is given to a Koyin, so the Eibishter, so to speak, is a Koyin. Which, by the way, B'nai Yisafra has an interesting idea how the word Koyin represents the Achdus of Hashem, the matter of Gematria, which might be too complicated to get into if we have time at the end before Ma'ariv, then remind me and I'll explain it. Anyway, if the Eibishter is a Koyin, we were captives in the Mitzrayim. Avodim, you know, the part of the Mitzrayim. So how, so to speak, is the Eibishter able to marry us, which is what happened by Matan Torah? So the Chidah starts giving the answer that based on our Gemara over here, if we see that when the Kohen is actually poida this woman, then he's allowed to marry her. So the same thing, the Eibishter was Marish Olam, he turned over the whole world in order to take us out of Mitzrayim. It shows, Kabiachal, that the Eibishter was willing to put his money where his mouth is. Therefore, we can say, there's a Chazakah that we were Tahar, after all. Then the Chidah brings another thing on it based on what you learned in the previous perek that a woman's relatives can give aidus, that she remained Tahar. So over here the Shechina was with us in Mitzrayim. Anyway.
Really?
Yeah. So that's the Shechina, so to speak, the relative of the Jewish people, yeah. Roma led a Papa Bashmul Rabbi Yosef. So a Papa Bashmul asked Rabbi Yosef another question. The Sover of Yehuda B'Kedushasa Kaima, you're telling me then that Rabbi Yehuda, again, according to Rabbi Yechanan, that Rabbi Yehuda holds outright that a Shvuya still has her Kedusha, there's no concern that any of her captors may have raped her. V'hatanya, but we learn in a Braisa, ha-Giyoris chenis gaira v'ras adam, a Giyoris who converts, and then she sees blood, and then she becomes a Nida. Now, the thing is like this. The Gemara discusses, that the first Mishnah in Nida discusses the idea that when... Now, when a woman starts bleeding as nida, when does she know she's nida? Usually only when the blood actually comes out. When does she actually become tamei? When the blood leaves the rechem, when it leaves the womb. But there's a prayer there over there, the birth canal over there, where the blood can be in there for a while before it actually oozes out. No, forget about Basola or Baola. Here we're talking about a regular period, a regular monthly period. From when the blood leaves the rechem, she becomes tamei. But she's not going to necessarily realize it until it actually oozes out of her body. In between, there might be a time in between that she's tamei and doesn't realize it. Minat Torah, we're not worried about that. Midrabanan, it's actually machlokas shama v'tilol, and it's actually a three-way machlokas, not shama v'tilol, it's actually a three-way machlokas. Shamai, Hillel, and the Chachamim. The halacha is like the Chachamim. That what we do is like this. We figure if she finds, let's say, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday, she finds that she's a nida. We have to assume that up to 24 hours before that, going back to 3 o'clock on Monday afternoon, she may have already been nida. It's not negeya so much as far as relations with her husband. What's done is done. It's negeya if she handled any taharas during that time. Then those are going to be tamei misafik. Unless during those 24 hours she did a bedika. If any time, and actually the Gemara mentions they were nida, that because of that in those days women used to be expected to do a bedika twice a day to make sure to catch any of this kind of thing. If she did a bedika, let's say Monday evening at 8 o'clock, then we know that, and she found it was tahor, she found it was clean. Then we know anything she handled from 3 to 8 on Monday is fine. We only have to worry about from 8 o'clock in the evening until 3 the next afternoon. This is called so. This is the rule of me'es la'es me'pkida le'pkida. Me'es la'es means a 24-hour period. Me'pkida le'pkida means back to the last time that she did a bedika.
Now in this clean bedika is retroactively.
So a clean bedika reduces the 24-hour period. If she had done a clean bedika 5 minutes ago, then she only has to worry about the last 5 minutes. If she did it 3 hours ago, then she has to worry about the last 3 hours, etc. But even if she did her last bedika 3 days ago, we don't have to worry about more than 24 hours. It's the lesser of 24 hours of the last bedika. Now, here we're talking about a case, a geyoris, a woman became a geyoris, she tovled to become a geyoris, and then she became a nida. Do we say that the retroactive tumah goes back to when she went to the mikveh or not? Rabbi Yehuda Omer Daya Shaita. So Rabbi Yehuda says no. Daya Shaita. It's enough to say that she's tamei as of when she finds the blood. We don't make this gzera that she's metamei going back to the last 24 hours or whatever. And Rashi explains the reason why is because. So we're talking about again. She went to the mikveh. Let's say at 3 o'clock. 4 o'clock. She finds she's nida. An hour later, well, 23 hours before she went to the mikveh, she was still a goita. 5 minutes before she went to the mikveh, she was still a goita. A goita is not tamei nida. So there's no reason to. And once we can't say that it goes back 24 hours, then there's no reason to say it goes back an hour either. The whole gzera goes together. Yad me'es la'es and mepkida l'pkida. It all goes together. If you don't have one, you don't have the other. Mepkida l'pkida means back to the last bedikah. Pkida means bedikah. It means checking. So there are mafoshim who talk about
that maybe the going to the mikveh itself would count as a last kiddah. Yeah.
But anyway, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we're saying we're not worried about that. According to Rabbi Yehuda, in the case of a giyoras, daya shaita, it's enough to consider her tamei as of right now. Rabbi Yossi, no. Harei kachol amnashim, no. Rabbi Yossi says that we consider this giyoras just like any other woman. Umetama mesles, umepkidah lepkidah. You have the same rule. That Mesles or Mepkida Lepkida. Okay, in this case, you can't apply Mesles because 24 hours ago she was a goita, but you apply back Mepkida Lepkida to the last time she did a bedikta, which in this case might very well be the last time she went to the mikveh, yeah. Okay, so that the Gemara is bringing in as kind of a side thing. The main thing is the next part of the Braisa, which the Braisa continues with Tzricha Lahamtin Gimel Chadashim, another din as far as a Giyoris, which is a Machloikas, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. A Giyoris has to wait 3 months before she marries a yid. We learned extensively about this in Yevamos, that there's the idea that the lahavchin min zerah shenizra b'kedusha lezerah shelo nizra b'kedusha. We have to be able to distinguish between whether she became pregnant as a goita or as a Jew. It's 3 months, therefore, because that way, if she has a baby, if she has a baby after a short pregnancy of 6 months, then we'll know, if she waited 3 months, then we'll know it was definitely after her tefillah. We learned by a grusha, we learned by a yavama. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of such cases, yeah. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi matila orusa l'nasim yad. Whereas Rabbi Yossi says that she's allowed to do erusin or to get married right away. You don't have to wait 3 months. We're going to learn soon why, but the important point is, for our purposes, is we mentioned in this, we didn't say anything in this braisa about a shvuya, but right now, at this point, the Gemara is assuming that a giyoris and a shvuya are on the same level. If we're making a giyoris wait 3 months, we should also make a shvuya wait 3 months. Why would she have to wait 3 months? The pashtus because of the concern that she was raped. But Rabbi Yehuda is saying in the Mishnah that there's no such concern. Amalei, so Rav Yosef says, very simple, Giyoris HaShvuya Karomis. What are you making a contradiction between a Giyoris and a Shvuya? Giyoris loy minter anapsha, Shvuya minter anapsha. Hello? A Giyoris does not necessarily guard, herself. She may well have had relations while she's still a goita. Therefore, you need to have chon for the 3 months. A Shvuya is going to be careful to try and keep herself to her. We learned previously the vart that the ritva, I think it was, said that that a shvuya usually tries to make herself as unattractive as possible to avoid one of the goyim raping her. So we can assume that a shvuya is going to try to keep herself to her, a giyoris, not necessarily. Which Tosfos points out, by the way, what about a shavuya with a katana? She may not know how to guard herself against the goyim. The answer is that's true, but if she's young enough to not know how to guard herself yet from this, if she's young enough that they're not going to bother her, that they're not going to bother her either. When she's old enough to already be ready for relations, then she'll be old enough to know how to guard herself. Yeah. Okay, the Gemara points out Rami shavuya shavuya. However, it's not just the Giyoris. We can find Braisa that mentions the Shvuya, which we can also put up against our Mishnah, and then you have a Stira. Titania, HaGiyoris VaShvuya VaShivcha, SheNiftu VaShinizgayru VaShinizhtachru, Yeseres HaBanoiz Gimel Shonam Yemechad, that if they were freed or redeemed or converted over 3 years old, Tzrichas LaHamtim Gimel Chadashim, and they have to wait 3 months, Zivir Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi Matila Oris LaNasim Yad. So the same thing we had in the previous Braisa that we said only about a Giyoris, this last Braisa here says about a Shvuya as well. So you clearly see, Rabbi Yehuda is saying a shvuya has to wait 3 months. Why? Because there's the concern that she may have been impregnated by one of the goyim. And here in our Mishnah, he seems to be saying there's no such concern. So again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's not such a problem. According to Rabba's explanation from yesterday, it's not such a problem. According to him, Rabbi Yehuda is only saying to be machmir on the onus of mafata and make him pay. But in all of the cases, we'll consider that she may well have been raped. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, that Rabbi Yehuda holds across the board that she's tar, well then why do we need the 3 months? Ishtik. So Rabbi Yosef was quiet. He couldn't think of an answer. Amalei, then he says to her, Papa Bashmul, Midishmi Allah Abaha, have you heard anything to fan for this? Amalei, yes. Hachi Amar Rav Sheshes, Shra'ua Shenivala. The case that we're talking about in this last braisa is we saw that she was nival. Before we were talking about, we're not sure. The normal case of a shvuya is we know she was captured by goyim. We don't know what happened after that. If there's evidence that she wasn't nival, of course, then everything's good. If not, then we're not sure and we have Xedo Dirabanan that we have to be concerned. This last braisa that I was talking about the other way around, we know for sure that she was nival. Therefore, the 3 months. Well, then the question is, Ihochi Mai Time of Rabbi Yosi. Well, then why does Rabbi Yosi say she doesn't have to wait 3 months? Amar Rabba, because Kasavar Rabbi Yosi, Isha Mezana Meshameshes B'moich Shalat Yisaber. Because Rabbi Yosi figures that a woman who's Mezana, or in this case over here, a Shvuya, who doesn't want to become pregnant from her captors, is going to use Moich in order to avoid becoming pregnant. Now, what's the Moich? Rashi over here explained, we've had the concept of Moich before in Yavamis, and we're going to have it also in a couple of days. Rashi explains that the purpose of the moich is she puts it in to oisin makom before having relations, and that way it absorbs the zera and prevents her from getting pregnant. Here Rashi says differently. Here Rashi says actually that she puts it in afterwards, after the bia, she uses it to absorb the zera. So the point is, that's the point. Rabbi Yossi is saying, why do we allow her to get to remarry right away? Because there's no concern that she's pregnant from her captor. We don't have to wait 3 months.
Wait a minute. We said she's tired, not that she's pregnant.
We said that Rabbi Yehuda is saying she has to wait 3 months. Rabbi Yossi is saying that she can get remarried right away. So why is Rabbi Yossi saying she can get remarried right away? Why aren't we concerned about Havchana? Because she won't have gotten pregnant. She'll have used Moich. Now, so why, Taka, does Rashi say different here? What Rashi says over here, Tosfos says in a few other places in Shas. Tosfos argues you're not allowed to do Tashmish with Moichin there already, because then it's like Allah Eitzim, Allah Avonim, the husband is doing Ashkos Azera. So therefore, Tosfos in various other places, including in Yevamos, says what Rashi says over here, that it means that you use the Moich afterwards to wipe. So why does Rashi say that over here? Sam Sofer explains that basically Rashi takes the view that if we're talking about that she's having znus, or in this case over here with a shvuya or whatever, they may not allow her to put in most ahead of time. So therefore, we have to be saying that we're talking about using it afterwards.
Would she be allowed up here lacha?
So that's a different issue. So there are achronim that talk about. We see from this that in certain cases, such as the cases that we're going to talk about in two dafim, a woman who is dangerous for her to get pregnant, or in this case over here where she doesn't want to get pregnant from a captor or whatever, then we'll allow her to do hashkasa zera. We'll allow her to absorb it or to wipe it or whatever to avoid getting pregnant. Yeah, hashkasa zera is more of an issue for the man than it is for the woman. Which is why Tosfos mentions in all those places that for her to put in moich and then the husband is going to have relations with her with the moich in might be more of a problem than her using moich afterwards to absorb it and wipe it. Oh, anyway, okay. So the question then is bishleima giyoris. Okay, well then I can understand why a giyoris is allowed according to Rabbi Yossi to remarry right away. Given the daita liyuri, since she already knew ahead of time she's planning to become a giyoris, mitzra nafsha. So already ahead of time she's careful. From then on, from when she knows that she's, or at least within the last 3 months before her expected date of giyoris, she knows to start using moich to avoid getting pregnant. Therefore, by the time she becomes a giyoris, 3 months have passed already that she's been using moich, and therefore there's no concern that she's pregnant at that point. Shvuya nami, similarly with a shvuya, we can argue that a shvuya is going to be careful. She doesn't know where they're going to be taking her. She's been captured. She's been taken from one place to another. She figures I may end up back by Jews who are going to do pidyon shvuyim. I may want to, after they do pidyon shvuyim, I'm going to want to marry one of them. I better be careful. I don't become pregnant from one of the captors over here, so I don't end up pregnant from them and having to raise the child of a goy among Jews and whatever. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi would say, therefore, that there's less concern that she's pregnant. And shivchanami, and with a shivcha also, you could argue the shamam pimara. In the usual case, you could assume a shivcha knows, she hears from her master, he's trying to flee her. So again, for a few months beforehand, she can be careful to start using moich. What are you going to say though in the case of a shivcha? We know one of the cases where a shivcha goes free is where the master, a shivcha knanis we're talking about, is where the master knocks out her eye or tooth or one of 24 other important organs. That's an unexpected thing. You can't necessarily expect that she's going to be using that she's going to be have moich prepared in that case. Michael Memer, so then what are you going to say? You're going to answer. Maybe Rabbi Yossi Taka says that even in any case, you're going to say that maybe yes, maybe Rabbi Yossi would make a distinction between things where you knew in advance what's going to happen versus you didn't. So let's say yes, Rabbi Yossi would say that a giyoris is fine. But a shivcha, if she was yotze b'shein v'ayin, taka has to wait 3 months. Can't harei anuso mefata d'mameila. What about the case of oynas and mefata, which are mameila? By definition, those happen, or not really mefata so much, but anusa happens without any advanced preparation, of course. It's an unexpected thing. V'tanya, and we learn in a braisa, anuso mefata tzrichas l'hamdim gimel chadashim divi Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi matila artis l'nasim yad. We have the same machlokas, where Rabbi Yehuda says an anusa and a mefata also have to wait 3 months, and Rabbi Yossi says that not. Ella Amar Rabba, no. The reason is, Kasavar Rabbi Yossi, it's not a question of moich, but rather, Rabbi Yossi figures, Isha Mizana Mishapechas Kadeshal Etisaber. A woman whose Mizana is going to be Mishapech, do some kind of physical exercise to make the Zera leak out so that she doesn't become pregnant. So therefore, you don't need any advanced preparation. Even in the case of a shivcha, then, you could say that she may not have prepared anything in advance. It's an unexpected thing that all of a sudden her master knocks out the shein v'ayin, and therefore she's going to go free shortly after that. But in general, a woman who doesn't want to become pregnant is going to be mishapich. Then the question is the idach. So then what is Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? The answer is cheshinin, shevel nepcha, yafa yafa. True, but not necessarily. Is the nepcha going to be so effective? She might still become pregnant. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda still says that you need the havchana, whereas Rabbi Yossi is figuring that not. Because Rabbi Yossi is figuring the hipuch is going to be effective. You did a good job, whereas Rabbi Yehuda argues not necessarily. Actually, I mean, we're just coming a few days ago from Purim. We learned in Megillah about how Esther was married to Mordechai, and then she's also taken by Achashverosh. And we learned that actually she used to go back and forth. She would get up from Achashverosh's embrace, Tevelas, and she'd tovel via Sheves Mecheke Shal Mordechai, and she'd go back secretly to Mordechai. And we learned there. We discussed over there Tosfos and various Achronim discussed how exactly she managed with Hatchana to avoid getting mixed up whose baby is whose. What? Yes, she was denied to Mordechai. Up until the point, when it came to the point when she had to go voluntarily to Achashverosh for the first time, then she, now I'm going to be lost to you, because I'd actually want to do nothing. But up until that point, she was an Anrusa. An Anrusa is still more to her husband, unless he's a Kohen. Mordechai's not a Kohen, he's a Rishav of Nihon. Yes, she was allowed to be married to Mordechai, and the Gemara says she actually, when she had a chance to, she would sneak out of the palace and go tovel mitzad Tara, and go be with Mordechai. So that's the thing. What about Achana? So one of many explanations is that in fact she used Moich. But that's the thing. That's what Chassam Sofer said. The vote is, that's why it's similar to what Rashi's saying over here. She shouldn't put in Moich in advance. Rashi Shverish would feel an effect there. What are you putting in Moich? Well, you don't want to become pregnant for me. She would have to use Moich afterwards. But Moich afterwards is not necessarily as effective, which is what the theory of Yossi and Yoda went to the first Lashon. Therefore, she wound up pregnant afterwards, and she ended up having the son Dariush, who was the next king of Persia. From Rashi Shverish. Actually, we learned at the time there was one of the Mephoshim who wanted to say that actually Dariush was, I forget who it was, we learned then that there was actually one of the Mephoshim who argued that no, in fact, Dariush was Mordechai's child, they just didn't know it. So there you have one example, but normally, that's what we said. We said the answer is not Shemeshet Shemoyt, because we found an objection to that. We found the case of a Shitza, where Shemeshet Shemoyt doesn't work. We said in the end of the question of Mishapechas. So then the question is, how effective is Mishapechas? So Yossi holds it's very effective, and Rabbi Yehuda holds it's less effective. Mishapechas, I mean, maybe she did, but apparently one time it failed. The Abishter arranged it in Ashamayim because Dariush had to be born so that he could eventually become king and give permission for the second Beis Hamikdash to be built. But anyway, yeah. Then the Mishnah continued. Well, the last part of the Mishnah talks about that if the guy was onus or mafasa, his daughter or his granddaughter or whatever, the various ones that are chayv misses based in. Where he's chayv mitzvah based in for relations with them, then he's potter from the knas because he's mitzchayv and nafshah, because kam lebe d'rabba menei. He's getting executed, therefore he doesn't have to pay the money. And the Mishnah says, because we learn from the pasuk, v'lo ye'asen onish ye'onish, where we learn the case over there where two people are fighting and one of them is just a pregnant woman, where the pasuk says, if there's no offline, if nobody gets killed, except he miscarries, onish ye'onish, that we find him, we make him pay the maybe lotus, the value of the baby, as opposed to being often then different rules apply. So we see from that, the Mishnah is saying, if there's often, if the death penalty involved, then there's no onus, then there's no financial penalties. Is that where you learn this din from? Mehosam nafka. Don't we learn it rather from a different place? Where the Pasuk says, we learned this the other day, that you punish a person according to his rishas. You can only be mechayev a person for one rishah, for one penalty, for one avera. It's not for two. The answer is Chodra Mitzvah Roman and Chodra Malchus Roman. Actually, you have two of him. One teaches us, the one that we quoted in our Mishnah teaches us that if you're getting Mitzvah, you don't know what to pay Mammon. The one that we're quoting now, David Shasta, teaches us that if you're getting Malchus, you don't know what to pay money. And we need both Sukkim. We can't learn one from the other. Because if we were only told the case where a person is being executed, he's caught for paying money, you would see enough why we'll make on him from the Ibn Shabbat, because after all, he's losing his life. That's a serious punishment. Why should we give him the double punishment? Have a Malchus Mammon like Ibn Shabbat, when it comes to Malchus, he's not losing his life. Maybe we should be Machus on him. The Yashmin and Malchus and Mammon, and if we only had the Pasuk Kedeshah Shasta teaching us about Malchus and money, you would say, okay, you should let Chomir Surah. The reason why we'll be Mako on him is because, after all, it's not such a strong Isser. He did something that's only Kayav Malchus. Maybe we should be Mako on him then. our Mitzvah moment, the common Easter, if he did something like this, we're obviously a very major Easter. Came away. Maybe we should not. Maybe we should fine him and make him pay money also. So that's why we need both circuits. Question is, will the mayor draw a loiko mashal? And what about according to the mayor who we learned the other day says that a person can get malchus and have to pay money? We learned that the mayor says that in the case of Adam Zegman, even when they're getting malchus, they also have to, that if they give Adam some somebody that he owed somebody else money, let's say, we make them pay and we give them malchus for the time for their age chapter. So one day you do get malchus and have to pay. Kauji Lomali. So according to the mayor, what do you need two circuits for? The answer is Chodeh B'Misa U'Malkus. One passage, one from our mission that teaches us about Misa and money. But Chodeh B'Misa U'Malkus. The other one, rather, the Ketev Shasai, who uses the point of the neighbor to say that you don't get Misa and Malkus. If you have an Avera, if you did an Avera, a Chayat Misa based in as well as Malkus, then you don't get both.
So the same thing.
No. Of course, the common we said is Misa and Mama, and he was saying Misa and Malkus.
So the same thing.
Yeah. And again, we need both of them. The Iashmein and Miso Mammon, if you were only told us about Misa and Mammon, you would say, you know why, you don't give them both. You would say, you know, Misa and Mammon, rather, you would say, you know what, you're not going to punish him once on his body and once in his money, which are two things. Our Miso Malkus, the Idi Vidi Begove, but when it comes to Misa and Malkus, both of them being done on the same body, you could argue that the Malkus is one long death, you have a long, drawn out method of death penalty, where you start with Malkus and then continue with Misa.
When
could it be? Well, for example, we talked the other day in the Gemara about various cases where a person does two things at the same time. So he did. Let's say, for example, he did one thing, which let's say he was in Chal Shabbos, which makes him Chayav Misa, and at the same time he did something else, which makes him Chayav Malkus.
So
that's what we're saying over here. You do give him the more chomer. You don't give him Misa and Malkus. If it weren't for the pasuk, Kedeva Shasa, you would think you do. Why? Because we would say, you would say, Misa Arichta. You should argue maybe it's one long, drawn-out death. But Nevid Bey, you should do it. The Gemara mentions the expression, Malkus and Misa. There's an expression someplace that the Gemara has, killing or half killing, what's the difference after all? They're both a form of killing. Malkus, in other words, should be considered like a half killing already. You're beating the guy half to death, and then you'll give him the death penalty and finish up the job. No, yeah, it would have to be that they gave him two upsets, two different things, yeah. Two different acts that he did, yeah.
You're going to exempt paying money, but what about the aspect of somebody's supposed to be getting, he's giving up his money, in other words, he owes money to somebody, whatever, that person's losing money because of this whole plan, because of how much of the robbery, whatever, somebody losing money, is it fair to him?
Okay, so Tosfos brings up the point over here, and also the other day, that yes, we do say with Mammon and Malkus, we said the other day that if there's Malkus and there's money, then make the guy pay money, at least in the case of Kabbalah, we brought a postulate that even though technically a person who hits somebody else should be chayav Malkus, we only make him pay money. That's because the Torah has Rachmanus on the Nefbal, he shouldn't lose out over there. Okay, in that case, yes, but in some other cases, we can't do that. Okay. The Nevid Beis, therefore maybe we should do both. The Iashmin and Mitzvah Malkus, conversely, according to the mayor, if we were only told a pasuk that you don't do Mitzvah and Malkus, you would say, I can't just have to be good for him. And the logic would be, you don't do two things to him on his own body. On the contrary, maybe you should argue, yes, no problem punishing him on his body and in his money. What about the problem with that? Amen Nevid Beis, maybe you should do both. So that's why we needed both. Now the Gemara is going to start going through today and continuing tomorrow, a number of other psukim in the Torah that seem to express this idea that there's no double jeopardy, that you don't make a person pay, that you don't give a person two penalties for the same aveda. And we're going to go through them pasuk by pasuk and show why we need each one of them. So far we have two. We have Veloyah Osman and we have Kedeva Shasai. Next one. The pasuk says, what do we need the pasuk that says? You should not take a redemption for the life of a murderer. The pasuk says that you don't allow him to get away with murder to not put him to death and instead take money from him. Don't do that. You got to put him to death.
Okay.
But what kofa means a payment for his life. As we're going to talk about a little bit later, there is a kofer. There is a case where the Torah says that you pay kofer, namely the case where you have a shermua. You have an ox that gored and killed people three times, where the ox is supposed to be put to, show you a circle. The gamba all of your must. The owner is supposed to be getting is supposed to be put to death. Also, actually, means misubidesh mine. I mean, the basin puts him to death means that he should be getting misubidesh mine. What did he do in kofer? You shafal. He paid a kofer. And that exempts him from Mitzvah Shemayim. So it's basically Shnatz, yeah. But so over here, what is the pasuk telling us when it's saying that you should not take kofar for a mitzvah? And the Gemara is assuming over here that the meaning of the pasuk is that the Gemara is assuming the meaning is that you have a person who's going to be executed for murder. Don't also take a kofar from him. But we already established from Kedei Rishasa or from Valoya Osen that you don't do that. The answer is no. The Amar Rachmana, no, that's the pasuk means something else. There it means something else. It means don't take money from him to exempt him from the death penalty. It doesn't mean don't take money from him in addition to the death penalty. That we already know. It means that you shouldn't commute the death penalty in favor of a monetary payment. How about another pasuk in the same parasha? Next pasuk, actually. What do we need the next pasuk that says you should not take a kofar from somebody who is running away to the Ori Miklot? Again, it sounds like the pasuk means that you shouldn't do both to him. Don't make him run away to the Ori Miklot and make him pay money. And the answer is again, no, that's not what it means. It means Amar Rachmana leTishkum Amayim neVetifted him in Golos. It means don't take money from him in order to exempt him from Golos. You would say you're paying money, therefore we're going to prevent the Goyal Adam from getting to you. Don't do that. Okay, so what do we need both Pesukim? The answer is Chad B'Shogig and Chad B'Mezid. One pasuk is talking about somebody who kills B'Shogig, where he goes to Lari Mikva. One's talking about B'Mezid, where he needs to be executed. And again, we need both Pesukim. The Eshmin and Mezid, because if you were only told the case of Mezid that we should not commute it for money, you would say, you know why? Mishum Tomari Surah, that's a very serious issue that he killed somebody on purpose. Of course you can't allow him to pay money and get away with it. Abel Shogig Vile Chomari Surah, but Shogig, which is not such a strong issue, he did it by accident after all. Amaloy, you might think, well, maybe you okay, you know, it was only for Shogig. Maybe it should be acceptable for him to pay money to the victim's family. The Yashmin and Shogig, and conversely, if the Pasuk had only told us the second Pasuk, that you shouldn't do this by Shogig, you would say, Fakir, Mishum Deleke, Ibud Neshama. You know why? Because after all, he's not losing, again, like we said before, the logical Malchus. He's not losing his life. Sachako, all it is he has to go to the Orim, they have to go to the Umiklot and stay there for several years, till the Kohen Gadol dies. So, okay. And Pasuk is saying, in that case, that's not a serious enough punishment that we should that we should allow him to get away with it. Let him go ahead and get that punishment. There's no reason to commute it. I'm amazed at the Ikibur Neshama, but when it comes to amazed where he's going to lose his life, and people might think, there Rashi points out on the bus over there, people might think, you know, you already have one guy dead, why should we go and kill another person, and we're going to have two dead people now, as, you know, as death penalty opponents say nowadays. Amalot, he might think, nah, maybe you should just let him get away with paying money. Tzricha, that's why we need both of them. Okay, next, the Pasuk also continues over there. This is all in Parashas Maaseh, in Perek Lamed Hei, when it discusses the Dinim of Ritzeach and the Humiklot and whatever. The Pasuk continues, the land will not have a kapara for the blood that was spilt in it, only with the blood of the one who spilled it. Meaning, basically, when a person is killed, there's no kapara until the person who killed him gets executed. Lovely, what do we need that Pasuk for? If we already established from the previous psukim that yes, a mazed murderer has to be put to death, a shogig murderer has to run away to the army club, what is this pasuk adding? The answer is mibayle lechidatanya. We need it to teach us what we learn in the following brisa. Minayin she misarfa egla v'achak nimta harig. How do we know if the egla arufa was decapitated? We know the din of egla arufa from the end of Parashas Shoftim. If the egla was decapitated v'achak nimta harig, and then afterwards we find the murderer. Minayin shein fotu no. So how do we know that you don't pater him? You still have to execute him. Shenema, that's what the pasuk is saying. Don't think, in other words, once you did the egla arufa, that's it. The kapara has been accomplished. Kafir lam so yisrael ha-shepodisa. No, if you find the guy after that, you still have to execute him. And actually, the Rabbeinu Bachaye brings on the pasuk, and some other Rishonim bring from Midrashim that the vote was that after the Eglah Rufa was decapitated, worms would start growing in it, as they do in rotting meat, and those worms would crawl away and find the Ritzeach and kill him. And if the worms didn't kill him, then it was up to Beis Din to do that. If they never are able to find the guy, if they were never able to find the guy, or let's say he's dead already, maybe the next week somebody shot him, you know. But if they find the guy, then they have to execute him. If not, then the kapara at least has been accomplished. All right. Then the pasuk continues. Okay. In that case, then what is the pasuk at the end of the parasha of Eglah Rufa? The pasuk finishes off over there that you should clean out the innocent blood from you. So what is that pasuk adding? The answer is mibayla l'chidatanya. We need it for the following for what it says in the following verse. Minayim l'mosim b'sayet shumin atzaver. How the chaz we know? Torah says that there's four mitzvahs and still a straight ahead of us. How do we? One of them is sayet, being killed by the sword. How do we know, Dafka, that it means chopping off the guy's head, chopping off his neck? Tamad Leimer, that's why. You have to wipe out the killers of innocent blood from you. Meaning, we're making a hekesh between a murderer and an Eglah Rufa. The Eglah Rufa, how are they killing it? They're decapitating it. They take a, as Gemara is going to say in a second, they take a koifit, a large a meat cleaver, a large heavy knife, and they chop off its head. So therefore, we learn from that a Ritzeach, which a Ritzeach gets saif, that we learn from a pasuk in Mishpatim, Nokim Yinokim, which we learn by Zedr Shavah, that Nokim Yinokim means Mitzvah Saif, means Hereg. So it means the same thing. It means chopping off his neck. No, that's the next thing. Well, in that case, if you're going to make that comparison, by the Eglah Rufa, you're using a koifit, a meat cleaver, and you're doing it from the back of the neck. Akan b'koifit v'mamol erif, maybe also by a person who's chayef hereg. And by the way, beside the murderer, the other case in the Torah, that's the other case in the Torah where a person is chayef hereg is the people of Irani Dachas. Those are the two ones that are chayef hereg. So that's maybe it means the same thing. Maybe it means you use a cleaver and you cut and you chop for the back of the neck.
I know Lieberman from the Knesset, the foreign minister in Israel.
Yeah.
He doesn't have family today. He needs to be head of all the bears.
Has that? Okay. All right. So Taka, how do we know not? Because the fact of the matter is, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that you use a sword, not a cleaver, and you cut from the front of the neck, not from the back. Omer of Nachman, Omer of Abba. Now there is actually in the Mishnah there actually in Sanhedrin in the Mishnah over there, Rabbi Yehuda actually says you use a cleaver, and the Gemara discusses over there because he says otherwise it would be chukas goyim, because goyim execute people by the sword, so we should be different from them. But according to Chachamim, you use a sword. Why not a cleaver, and why not the back of the neck?
Because
the pasuk says we have to learn echa kamecha, which means brur loy misiyafe. It means you have to choose for him the easiest bit. So it means the Torah is telling you have to give him herem. So there's no choice. You have to do something. You have to do something which involves decapitating him, as we're saying over here. But you should do it in the easiest possible way. Which means you don't use a cleaver, because among other things, first of all, cleaver is what they use on animals, and second of all, also it doesn't just cut, it also breaks the bones and whatever, it causes more pain than just a sword. And for the same reason, you do from the front of the neck, not from the back. So that way you cut the two pipes right away, the windpipe and the esophagus, and the guy right away dies, like an animal of chest, unlike you're chopping from the back, where then it's more painful. No, actually, well, it's actually machlokas in Sanhedrin. It's machlokas throughout the Sefer Sanhedrin, where the sayif or chenek is the easiest. But the point is, within each kind of misa, you try to make it as easy as possible for him. With skila, for example, the place is dafka two body heights high, not more, not less, so he doesn't have to suffer too much, not more, so the body doesn't get such fetid. And so with each one of the misas, you try to find the easiest possible way. Yeah.
Well, on the other hand, if you get it from the back, at least he doesn't.
If he's standing there ready to get hereg, he knows it's coming anyway, yeah.
What if
the V'ahat L'Rech HaKamecha, yeah.
So I know the V'ahat L'Rech HaKamecha, such a degree, does it really make any difference? I mean,
but it does, actually, and Mepharshim talk about it a little bit. That's, first of all, the Shittim HaKubet just brings one idea. We can understand the word L'Re'acha B'Loshen Ra, as if it was V'Re'acha L'Ro'acha Kamaycha. Even the Ra, even the evil person who has to be executed, you still have to do V'Re'acha. There's also the idea that, after all, the Mrs. Basin is a kapara for him, so therefore there's kapara for him, and after the Mrs. Basin is done, he is achicha again. He is reacha, he is achicha, he's dead, but he's fourth brother. You still have to treat him. You still have to treat him with derech eretz.
You
have to vidur it beforehand. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's called a mamosin mitzvah. But that's the idea. So therefore, brother Misiyafa, you want to make it that it should be the nicest way. Now, Tosfos points out, you still do need the Keter Shava from Egla Arufa, after all. Otherwise, B'chalal, how would you know the neck is involved? Tosfos says, and you could just as well be Misiyafa. You can stab the guy in the heart. That's also an immediate death. Once we know from Egla Arufa, it has to involve the neck, then within that, Misiyafa means doing a sword and doing it from the front. But it has to be. Okay, how about another pasuk that talks about people who are being put to death and money? The pasuk says at the end of Parshas Vayikra, at the end of Chumash Vayikra, Kol cherem asher yochram min ha'adam lo yipadeh. Any cherem from people, lo yipadeh should not be redeemed. Lovely. What is that teaching us? It sounds, on the face of it, that it means that the person is cherem, a person is to be executed, that you can't redeem him. But we know that already from the previous pasukim. We don't need an extra pasuk for that. The answer is Mboilel Chedetanya. We need it to teach us the following thing. Usually cherem means killing. But actually, we're going to doubt over here that actually the word cherem really means, that the word cherem over here, Rashi says, over here really means hektish. Rashi quotes over here that the kol cherem mashmalot and chai b'emissus, the word cherem can imply chai b'emissus, which means mitzvah. But here we're going to be darshaning that actually the word cherem has meaning of hektish. At the end of the next Rashi says, "I cherem or hektish." So what does it mean? We need it to teach us what it says in the following brayta. Minayli goes to the horeg. How do we know if a person is going out to be killed by any of the four Mrs. Basting? For omar echad erkoy alai, and somebody else says this person's erech is on me. I'm obligating myself to bring his erech to the Beis Hamikdash. The erech we know. There's a table over there. You look at the person's age, you look at their gender, male or female, and you pay an appropriate amount to the business. It doesn't depend on their actual value on the slave market. That's something else. That's called dumim. An erech is a fixed value. A man between 20 and 60 is always 50 shkolin, whether he's a healthy person or whether he's bent over double, and similarly with all the other ones. But how do we know if a person is going out to be killed by Mrs. Basin, that if somebody says, erkoy alai, minayin shalai omakum, how do we know that what he said is meaningless, there's no erach to be paid? That's what the pasuk is saying. Kol cherem asher yochram min ha'adam lo yipadeh. We understand the pasuk, in other words, to mean like this. Kol cherem, any hektish, asher yochram min ha'adam, on a person who is being taken out as cherem, who is being taken out to be executed, lo yipadeh. Now, it's not a lo that says you should not redeem him. It's a statement of fact. That neder does not have to be redeemed. Why? Because Moi Tuma, because the guy is being killed.
This is a new
thing. We're not talking about commuting his sentence for money. That we already learned before. You can't do that. No, now we're saying something else. If a person over there is being taken to be executed, so I say that guy is between 20 and 60 years old. His erech is 50 shkolim. I'm vowing to bring 50 shkolim as his erech to the mikdash. I don't have to. He doesn't have an erech at this point. He definitely doesn't have dummy, because he's not worth anything on the slave market since he's condemned to be executed. But we're gonna mention in a second, it's actually machlokes tanoim. What we just said is according to the Chachamim, which is the halacha, that this person doesn't have any erech either. That's what we learned from this pasuk. But the baisa continues, yachol ach kodesh yigomar dinei kein, shenigmar dinei kein. He would think the same din applies even before the gemar din, while the guy is being judged. No, tamal baimah min ha'adam vol kol ha'adam. The min is a mute. Only a certain kind of person, asher yachram. Namely, when there's already a gemar din, when he's already been definitively that he's going to be executed. Before that, you can make an erech. Before that, he does have an erech, yeah. Now, the question is, what about according to Rav Hanani ben Akavya, who argues over there in Erech and says the person does have an Erech? He says he doesn't have Tavim, fine, but he does have an Erech, because that's a fixed value that it says in the Torah. You just look at the guy at the age and gender. There's no other variables are involved. Hi kocherim my avdalei. So what does he do with the pasuk kocherim? The answer is Rabbi Yehuda Chiditani. He uses it for a different thing that it says in the Braisa. Rabbi Shmuel Breisha Rabbi Yechon the Breikaimer. Mafishim afinim lumumasim bidei shemayim. Now we find people who are chayav misa bidei shemayim. Shenois din mamim, they were able to pay money. Or mistapala had a kapara for them. Shenema in kof yushasolov. This is the case we were talking about before. A person who had a shomuad, where after the ox has already killed people three times, a shor yishtashu begam ba'olav yomas. What does begam ba'olav yomas mean? Misa bidei shemayim. But we're allowing him to get out of that mitzvah shemayim with money. In kofer yushasolav, he pays a kofer, and the Gemara discusses in Bava Kama what that value of the kofer is. Is it the value of the person who was killed, or is it the value of the person who's giving the kofer? Anyway, yachol afidei adam. Okay, and you would think the same thing should apply if somebody is chayiv mitzvah bidei adam. By based in no tamad loy acherem mina adam lo yipode. No, that's what the pasuk is saying. Acherem, somebody who's to be killed mina adam by people lo yipode cannot be redeemed. The Ainli continues, Ainli of Mrs. Hamuris Shalanitna Shigivas and Lachapara. Okay, in that case, we would only know that this applies to harsh Mrs., the kind of Aberis Shalanitna Shigivas and Lachapara, where there's no Kapara for the case of Shogig. Namely, like this. You have, for example, okay, so 1 second. So you have like this. Most Chayvi Krisis, for example, most things that are Chayv Karis, a person doesn't go Shogig, he brings a Chapas. On the other hand, most things that are chayiv mitzvahs based in, there's no such thing for shogig. A person, bar bito, for example, from our Mishnah, there's no shogig he brings a chatas. There's no particular for him to shogig. So we might say like this: when you have mitzvahs chamura, if you have something which is chamur, like for example a bar bita or whatever, it's the arayas that are chayav mitzvah, then you would argue that maybe you can't do anything about them b'shogig. There's no chatas for them b'shogig. So therefore, maybe that's why the Torah is being machmir on him and saying he can't buy his way out of it. Mrs. Kalas Shinitna Shigafan Kapara Minayin. How do we know that she even applies to Mrs. Kalas, the kind where there is something you can do b'shogig, such as eating chaylev or breaking Shabbos, or Rashi also gives the example of Ritzeach, where we see that Ritzeach doesn't bring a carbon, he doesn't bring a chakas b'shogig, but he goes to the Aramitha b'shogig. Let's consider that there's kapara for b'shogig. Tosfos argues on that and says that no, Ritzeach is not in that category. When we mean over here Shinitna Shigafan Kapara, we mean that the kind where you can bring a carbon for the shogig. Which means all the chayav krisis and a couple of the mitzvahs based in like Shabbos, but not Ritzeach. Anyway, how do we know that it's included in that? Also, no Talmud Lema Kol Cherem. Well, because the pasuk says Kol Cherem, anybody who is to be executed. So it doesn't matter whether it's Mrs. Kalas or Mrs. Hamurit, as long as it's something where there's mitzvah involved, you can't buy your way out of it. So that's what we need the pasuk Kol Cherem for. We'll stop over here because it's almost nighter, but the obvious question, the next question that the Gemara is going to ask tomorrow is, we already had the pasuk Lusit Kukofer, that a Ritzeach can't buy his way out of it. Why do we need, according to this opinion, why do we need the pasuk Kocherim? What else is that adding? So we'll leave that for tomorrow, Beth Hashem.